The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, hello. It's me. Sorry, a little pun on the concert we saw Saturday night. Welcome to the show. It's a Monday, a new week. Hopefully this is the week that stuff gets done. I don't know. We'll see. Because it's all up to, I can't believe it, two people. Again, this is not democracy. You know, I pulled some audio. On Friday, Alex Lawson was here. And I've known Alex for many, many years. And he's he's a friendly acquaintance. So, but we are, I got to see if I have it here. Is it this one? I pulled this clip. No, I don't even think that's it. Damn it. Is it? Let me just see. Is it?
Hold on. Is the vote to respect the sanctity of the vote. Oh, no, this is Nancy Pelosi. Fundamental.
Oh, well. I pulled some audio of Alex Lawson when he was on the show the other day talking about, oh, you know what? I bet it's right here. Hold on. I think I have it because it's always better to hear it rather than hear I even got the edited one. I'm just a little slow today. I think I need more sleep. I didn't sleep enough over the weekend. Here's our little jinx moment from Friday.
Jinx.
Whoops. I got to go back to the beginning. So we were talking about the Senate and how undemocratic it is.
Exactly.
Everything about the Senate is dumb.
Openly call for the abolition of the Senate. It should have been, right? I mean, like, so it's already hugely anti-majoritarian.
That's
and
right.
Then you make it a 60 vote threshold and you're like, this doesn't work. This is
not
democracy.
Ooh, jinx, you owe me a soda. That was one of those moments when great minds think alike. The bottom line is it's not democracy. Democracy embraces the idea of majority rule. And right now, what we have in this country is minority rule. And that's what the Republicans want to make permanent. The topic for today's show, when our guest joins us, is really going to be voting rights, because it's astounding when you think about it. It's been over 50 years since the Voting Rights Act was passed. And as recently as 2006, it was reaffirmed unanimously in the Senate. When it would come up every few years for, to be reaffirmed, it was not controversial. It always passed unanimously until what, like a dozen years ago or so? And now the Republicans, for the third time in this term, in this congressional session, filibustered it. I know I talk about it all the time. I say it all the time, but it is opposite world where nothing makes sense. Everything is back ass words. You know, everything. If you listen to what they say and you kind of turn it upside down, you might have some semblance of the truth.
Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
And it really, really is. I mean, when you hear the stuff they say, you know, I have all these trolls after me these days. I don't know what I do to inspire them, but I'm like a blue light, and the bugs are just, coming to me. But the insanity is crazy. Somebody posted a comment on one of the show videos on YouTube. And it said something like, would you rather live in Biden land? And I responded. I said, any day of the week. If you're talking about, would I rather live in Biden land or Trumperville? No question. And he goes on to say, well, Joe Biden is evil. He's evil? What's Donald Trump? A great leader. And I think that's when I blocked him. We went back and forth a few other times. There were so many things I could have dinged him on. But, I also don't waste my time arguing with trolls on social media. Well, as much as I can avoid it. So this weekend, just so you know, we went to the concert. David and I went to see Todd Rundgren. My first, our first live music, literally, in 2.5 years. We were as careful can be, for those of you watching. There's the picture of us sitting inside the Fillmore. Fillmore! It's the Jackie Gleason Theater in Miami Beach. It's an historic, beautiful Art Deco theater that is where the Jackie Gleason show was taped, The Honeymooners. And if you're old enough to remember, Jackie Gleason used to say, Miami Beach audiences are the greatest audiences in the world. Maybe they're changing the name of it because you can't say that anymore. It's depressing. Todd Rundgren, for those of you who don't know, is one of the greats. He really is. He's actually going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think, this week. Though he's got a thing against the Hall of Fame, so he wasn't going to go, and then he offered that he would, and I don't know if they've taken him up on it. He's got a show in Cleveland that night, and that's where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. So anyway, what's so depressing is the Fillmore isn't a huge venue. I would say it holds a couple thousand people. It was less than half full, so much so that when you walked in, they had the whole, like, most, probably three quarters of the balcony curtained off and about half of the orchestra curtained off, and it was still half empty. Now, I know COVID is part of it, right? A lot of people were hesitant. Look, as much as I wanted to go, and we had tickets to this same show back last June, which got canceled. And so then when it rescheduled, you know, it was early enough. We had the vaccine, and it was pre-Delta variant. So I bought tickets. Here's how crazy I am. I bought tickets, and then Delta happened. And I started reading reports of just horror stories of people who, would go to concerts and were fully vaxxed and were careful, and they got sick. And I just, you know, look, I'm not usually that paranoid. That's my husband. He's the hypochondriac and the paranoid one among us. But being that I'm a lung cancer survivor and I'm down a lung, my left lung is pretty much gone. My oncologist said that I'm not at greater risk of catching it than anyone else. But if I were to get COVID pneumonia or pneumonia from COVID, that it would be really bad. So the last thing I wanted to do was get COVID. So I've been really, really careful. But, you know, it's been the last show. I went back and looked through my calendar. The last concert we went to was in May of 2019. So before COVID hit. Because, I don't go to that many shows these days. But we went to see Joe Jackson. It was a brilliant concert. And so it's been, 2.5 years since I've been to a live show. So just because I can, and don't worry, I'm not going to get copyright violated because of this. I checked because there are a lot of videos posted on YouTube of this Todd Rundgren tour. And I checked with one of the people who posted a bunch of videos from a slew of shows from the last few weeks, who happens to be a listener. Hi, I think his name is Lyle. Hi, Lyle. And he's like, yeah, don't worry. Just don't try to monetize it. So I won't try to monetize it. But here, just for those of you who want a taste, it was so worth every second of it. Here's a little bit that you'll recognize. You can sing along if you want. Good, right? I mean, it sounds great. And this is just a shitty cell phone recording. I'll just give you a few more seconds. Take the granted that you just don't care enough. So do this. All right, you just, I'll let it go a little longer. I could do this the whole show, except I didn't tape the whole show. I just wanted to give you a taste. Seeing live music is just great. I'm telling you, I didn't realize how much I missed it. Well, I did, but I didn't, you know, until I was there in the room. And it was so good. And we wore our masks the whole time. They had a thing where you had to show either your proof of vaccination, that you're double vaxxed, we're triple vaxxed, or your negative test that's less than 72 hours old. And for people who didn't have it, they had a table set up there where you can get your COVID test for $40 a piece. And so there were people who came in late, like they pretty much missed the whole first set. And they're like, we didn't know you had to do that. And I said, well, it was everywhere. I mean, it was everywhere. Oh, so I started telling you. So what I did was when the Delta started again, I'm like, shit. I went to Ticketmaster and they gave you the option to get a refund, which they don't ever do. But it's a Todd Rundgren thing because, you know, he came out on stage. He's like, I see we have the pro-vax people here. And everyone cheered. He's very anti, you know, former guy. Anyway, so I hit it for a refund. So I got the refund. And then I thought, well, shit, but I really want to go. So what happened is we went up to the box office and got actual tickets that were better seats than the ones I got the refund for. Huh. So that was my weekend. I'm still, frankly, a bit high from it because, wow, you think about it. We went for about a year and a half with all live music stopped. And like I said, it was so sparsely attended. And I'm wondering how many people actually bought tickets and didn't show up because there were a lot of empty seats in the front section too. Anyway, I'm fumfering here. I'm procrastinating because I don't want to get to the gist of, you know, what we do around here. And what we do around here is usually talk politics. And well, I guess there's good news and bad news from over the weekend. The good news is it appears they're getting closer to a deal. Ooh. The bad news is they're not there yet. And Joe Biden is leaving the country, I want to say, on Thursday. And he's headed out to a G20 summit and a climate, a COP26, I think is what it is. And he wants to get something done. Well, the thing is, we don't know what's going to be in this because Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema have an unreasonable hold on the Democratic Party. And that's because of this thing, this construct that really came out around, I think, in the Jim Crow era. It's not in the Constitution anywhere. It's called the filibuster. And the filibuster just needs to go. So on Friday, I played you a clip. It was Joe Biden from the town hall that he did on CNN the night before. I don't have it up here. Let me get that clip for you because I want you to hear that and then hear what Joe Manchin said. And it's enough to turn your stomach. So if you have a weak stomach, you might not want to listen to this. But all right, this is Joe Biden at the town hall the other night.
I also think we're going to have to move to the point where we fundamentally alter the filibuster.
Are you saying once you get this current agenda passed on spending and social programs that you would be open to fundamentally altering the filibuster
or
doing away with it?
Well, that remains to be seen exactly what that means in terms of fundamentally altering it, whether or not we just end the filibuster straight up.
Voting rights is equally as consequential.
When it comes to voting rights, just so I'm clear, though, you would entertain the notion of doing away with the filibuster on that one issue. Is that correct?
And maybe more.
And maybe more. Yeah. So that made news. I mean, that's the moment that stood out to me of that whole town hall, because that was a change. Well, Joe Manchin, That's all I need to say. Some reporters, I think Manu Raju from CNN was among the reporters who caught up with Joe Manchin as he was getting in his car and leaving. I think this was today. And it was on the subject of the filibuster.
We're actually actively working to recruit out-of-state law enforcement because we do have needs.
Whoops. That's the wrong one. Sorry. Oh, that was more on death sentence. Sorry about that. Where is the Manchin clip? Oh, shoot. Now, hold on. Do I have it here? I for some reason, I didn't put it on my wall. There it is. Okay. Oh, so it's this clip I labeled Manchin is an asshole because I have my own little shorthand for how I label this the clips that I use. All right. So here's Manchin is an asshole. Here we go.
Serious thing we can do, and we're not going to do it anymore. And I said, remember I told you
this
before,
is Manchin speaking.
This was, we were not going to default, and we did not default, and we will not default and go through this again. We'll work it out.
Reconciliation, should your party go through reconciliation to do this next
well,
time?
Well, I have a difference. I think that reconciliation would not have hurt us, but I understand that there's a lot of people that don't want to, and as against us, it's a difference of opinion on that.
What? Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, we shouldn't have to go through reconciliation. We should both agree that this is too serious for any of us to get in trouble with mm-hmm. and to play with. It's just too
yeah.
serious.
Yeah, should well, and
you
would.
You will just 100% not agree to a carve-out of the filibuster
no,
to
we
do
the
dance
not that at all, guys. I mean, that's, the filibuster is the only thread that we have to keep democracy alive and well in America.
No!
It keeps us the body that
not
we are.
True.
It makes us, even when it, you see
Hello.
Kind of...
I do have...
We still realization.
Hold on 1 second, John.
And if we didn't have the filibuster to where it could keep us coming back to civility from time to time, then you would see total chaos.
Okay, so what he said there was the filibuster is the one thing that's kept us, you know, that's held on to democracy. That is flat out
bullshit.
It's just bullshit. The filibuster is keeping us from having a real democracy. So everything Joe Manchin says, look, he's living an opposite world too. And it is frustrating. It's just frustrating as anything. It's just horrible. So that's Joe Manchin. One other thing that I wanted to get to before we get our guest up is our friend Muttley, who is in the chat room, the YouTube chat room from Australia. I think where it's very late at night there. He asked, did anyone see the Rolling Stone article? Well, yes, this is a huge story that, interestingly enough, comes from Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone used to break a lot of news, not so much lately, but this time they actually did again. And it's a reporter named Hunter Walker. And the headline reads, exclusive, January 6th protest organizers say they participated in dozens of planning meetings with members of Congress and White House staff. Okay, is this the smoking gun we're waiting for? Because something better happened already. It has been 10 months since the insurrection. And, you know, the prosecutions are few and far between. And none of the big guns, so to speak, have been held responsible. Well, in this case, what the reporter, Hunter Walker, tells us is that three people who were involved in the planning of that January 6th events have been cooperating with the House Select Committee who's investigating it. So they've been talking. Two of those three spoke at length with Rolling Stone magazine. So they go into detail. It says the two sources who spoke with them, both of whom have been granted anonymity due to the ongoing investigation, described participating in dozens of planning briefings. I just told you that. He's one of them, who they refer to as the organizer, said, I remember Marjorie Taylor Greene specifically. I remember talking to probably close to a dozen other members at one point or another, or their staffs. So what he goes on, he says, the two sources helped plan a series of demonstrations that took place in multiple states around the country in the weeks between the election and the storming of the Capitol. According to these sources, multiple people associated with the March for Trump and the Stop the Steal events that took place during this period communicated with members of Congress throughout this process. And then they go on to say, along with Marjorie Taylor Greene, the conspiratorial pro-Trump Republican from Georgia who took office earlier this year, the pair both say The members who participated in their conversations or had top staffers join in included Congressman Paul Gosar of Arizona, Lauren Boebert of Colorado, Mo Brooks of Alabama, Madison Cawthorn of North Carolina, Andy Biggs of Arizona, and Louie Gohmert of Texas. The organizer again said, we would talk to Boebert's team, Cawthorn's team, Gosar's team, like back to back to back to back. And Gosar, who has been one of the most prominent defenders of the January 6th rioters, allegedly took things a step further. Both sources say he dangled the possibility of a blanket pardon in an unrelated ongoing investigation to encourage them to plan the protests. The organizer said, quote, our impression was that it was a done deal, that he'd spoken to the president about it in the Oval in a meeting about pardons and that our names came up. They were working on submitting the paperwork and getting members of the House Freedom Caucus to sign on as a show of support. The organizer claims the pair received several assurances about the blanket pardon from Gosar. And the story goes on from there. So this is a bombshell. You know, these are the same people who go, oh, it's just a touristy day at the Capitol.
Bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit is right. So, you know, with all this going on, and of course, the crazy right wingers are going, it's Rolling Stone. They don't know anything. And then and that's not bad. That's not true. And because they deny reality. This is the problem we're facing. It's one thing. We should have two parties. We should have two. There are two sides to every story. It's hard to have one political party in a democracy without reasonable opposition. And I know, look, I feel like Republicans haven't been reasonable in many years, but I will take, and I'm not talking about the people sitting in the Oval Office because they've all been in my lifetime pretty much batshit crazy. Seriously, thinking about it. From Nixon to Ford to the Bushes, Bush 1 and Bush 2 to Reagan to Trump. I mean, that's a pretty sad group there. But the people, the Republican rank and file didn't always used to be this bad. They used to call the Senate, what, the greatest deliberative body in the world. Well, they don't deliberate anything anymore. The Republicans just filibustered the voting right, debating the Voting Rights Act, not voting on re-upping it or passing the new Freedom to Vote Act. They filibustered, blocked opening debate on it. They don't even want to talk about it because they don't want you to vote. That's their strategy now. That's been their strategy for 40 years.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
That's Paul Weyrich, founder of ALEC, Heritage Foundation. That is their long game. See, they play the long game. We don't. You know, yes, I'm a Democrat. I'm a Democrat because I've got nowhere else to go. I'm certainly not going to be a Republican. We're a two-party system here. Yeah, there are other parties, but they have no bearing and no one from the Green Party or any other party at this point in our history is going to get elected or change the world. So sometimes you got to work within the system that you've got. And so that makes me a Democrat. They're not great, but at least we have people there working to make lives better for the rest of us. That's their goal. But again, I'll go back to the whole troll thing. And I've got more than my fair share of trolls these days. And what they come to me with is that we're evil. We stole the election. We're the ones pushing propaganda. I mean, it's everything's backwards, everything's opposite. And what scares me, look, 74 million people voted for Donald Trump. 80 million people voted for Joe Biden or voted against Donald Trump. What scares me is that there are so many Americans who believe the bullshit. They take the lies that are spoon-fed to them, not only by the former guy, but by the right-wing propaganda network. And that's what it is. It's not even right-wing media anymore. It is right-wing propaganda. And they're feeding them a steady diet of lies, and they believe it. I mean, to the point where even, you know, my governor, the guy who we need to unseat in 13 months, please, moron death sentence, as I refer to him. Let me just play for you this clip. This was Ron DeSantis. Oh, you know what? That's not even the one. Oh, it is. What he's doing now is, you know, he's anti-mandate. He's anti-mask. He's anti-vaccine. I don't understand where he's trying to go with this, but apparently he wants everyone in Florida to die. And then, so now he put out a call to the rest of the country that if you're a law enforcement officer anywhere in the country and maybe you lost your job because you refused to get vaccinated, well, come to Florida. We'll take you.
Needs and our police and our sheriff's department.
Listen to this.
So in the next legislative session, I'm going to hopefully sign legislation that gives a $5,000 bonus to any out-of-state law enforcement that relocates in Florida. So NYPD, Minneapolis, Seattle, if you're not being treated well, we'll treat you better here.
Oh,
you can fill important needs for us, and we'll compensate you as a result.
Now, he fought back today against a reporter who said, so wait a minute, you're offering $5,000 to any non-vaccinated law enforcement from around the country who wants to come here? And he's like, not non-vaccinated. I didn't say that. But he alleged it. Basically, he said, if you've been fired from a police department because of a vaccine mandate, come here. Not only will we take you, we'll give you $5,000. God, I want to get out of this place. I want to get out of this place. It's a song. I would sing it. All right. Our guest today is a... she's all about elections, election security, election integrity. She's also a lawyer and an author. Jenny Cohn, hold on, I got to bring your picture in, but there you are. Thank you so much for joining us today. I realized, you know, I've been following you for so long on Twitter, but I realized that I had never invited you on the show. So thank you for coming today.
Well, thank you for having me on. Wow. Looks like I've got a video delay, though.
I don't know why. You shouldn't. Let's give it a second, because it'll probably, it usually evens out.
I touched my hair like 5 minutes ago.
I know, right? There is a delay there, and it's not supposed to be. You know, technology, I got to tell you, either I was going to say, either it works great or it doesn't work at all. And what I find is it generally doesn't work for me.
Just really weird that, all right, well, anyway. We can try to work with it.
Yeah, it's actually catching up a little bit. There is a slight delay, though. I'm sorry. Just don't look at it. Don't even look at it. So, Jenny Cohn, I have to also pass along greetings from Brad Friedman, who says hello, because I know you're on Brad's show a lot. Brad and Desi are dear friends. I guest host their program all the time. I know Brad is much more into the nuts and bolts of election integrity than I am. I mean, he's been singing this song for a long time. And to be fair, there were problems with the elections before the Republicans started screaming fraud. And I guess we should start when we had been screaming about problems with elections, like inconsistencies with the electronic voting machines and things like that. They were never taken seriously. And those problems do exist, right? Or they have.
That's right. And one of the things that I have tried to focus on or to bring attention to and remind people of is that it was the GOP that blocked a Democrat-sponsored bill called the SAFE Act before the 2020 election that would have done some really important things to secure that election, including significantly improving and requiring official manual election audits for all federal races and removing internet connectivity. There are wireless modems in some of the precinct ballot scanners that connect to the internet.
Yep.
And, you know, the Republicans, the MAGAs act like they discovered this internet connectivity, and it's outrageous, but they actually, their leaders knew it in advance and purposely killed the bill that would have banned it. And it also would have eliminated paperless voting machines. So a lot of the problems that they're complaining about are things that their elected leaders and Trump could have done something about before the election, and the Democrats tried and were thwarted.
Right, because they're not really all about making sure our elections are not corrupted. They're all about making sure they win. Thus, the machinations, all of these new laws they're putting into effect in state after state after state, which most notably would get rid of the nonpartisan election supervisors, the people who run the elections in counties and states, and replacing them with party officials, with partisan hacks, and making it so that if they don't, for whatever reason, like the outcome of the election, that they have the power to say this is invalid and no good, and we're gonna give you our results, or we're gonna have a new. What is their end game here?
Well, I think their end game is to control the outcome, right, regardless of getting whether they get the most votes. And I do want to give a plug for another election security advocate, Marilyn Marks, and the Coalition for Good Governance, which is, to my knowledge, the only organization that is really actively taking on those county takeover provisions. They're doing it in Georgia, which will be another, which is an important state, increasingly looking like a swing state. And so they're working on that there. They have a very interesting take, which is their plaintiffs are the members of the board who can be deprived of their jobs by these takeover provisions. That's one of their many multi-pronged strategies to take over the results of our elections going forward.
So we have, the Democrats have been pushing two pieces of legislation, two big bills. One is the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which is an update, I'm guessing, of the Voting Rights Act. The other started out as the For the People Act, and then Joe Manchin got a hold of it, and it became the Freedom to Vote Act, which he assured everyone, we don't need to get rid of the filibuster. I'll get 10 Republicans on this bill and we'll pass it. Well, of course, the Republicans filibustered it just last week. Not only didn't Joe Manchin get 10 Republicans, he didn't get one. The bill was blocked by the Republicans filibustering it. So allegedly, they're going to bring that one back up again. But before that, they're going to bring up the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which probably will meet the same fate in the Senate. What's in these two bills? And is there anything that will protect us against what this nonsense, the stuff the Republicans are trying right now?
Well, the focus of my advocacy is primarily election security. Okay. So as I understand it, the provisions of these different bills are excellent on many issues like gerrymandering and right, dark money in politics, things that we absolutely need. And so I support any and all of them, actually. However, I am disappointed in the provisions as far as they pertain to election security. For one thing, none of them called for robust manual audits in 2022. They have audit provisions that don't, the most recent one, the For the People Act, has audit provisions that kick in 2024 on like a rolling basis, but that you start out with only having to audit one race in 2024. So that's just not good enough. And I feel like the Democrats really missed an opportunity here to call the Republican Party's bluff on audits. I mean, had they asked me, or if I had been in charge of the leadership, I would have said, look, GOP, you want audits? Let's do this. And if they said no, I would have gone back on TV and said, hey, MAGA voters, these are the people who are blocking audits for the next election. I mean, this is maybe the one time where we actually had some leverage to use against the Republican Party to get audits in 2022. And we did not even ask in any of these bills for meaningful audits across the board.
That's
in 2022.
That's astounding. Because when you think of the last couple of elections, right, going back to before Obama, we had 2000 where it was stolen. I mean, I'm sorry, Al Gore should have been president, but the Supreme Court stepped in and said, stop counting, and gave it to George W. Bush. That just went by. And then 2004 came in, and I guess Bush won that popular vote, but I'm not so sure. There were a lot of questions about Ohio. There were a lot of red flags raised, but it dropped and the Democrats never pursued it. Then we have 8 years of Obama. During that time, as far as I can tell, nothing was done to safeguard or secure our elections, were they? Anything?
Nothing officially, anyway. I think there were some advocacy groups that were working behind the scenes to at least move much of the country toward paper ballots instead of the paperless machines, but nothing was really done at the federal legislative level. No, I think that during the Obama years, the Democrats largely just figured, well, we have a Democratic president, things must be fine. And they got caught with their pants down in 2016 as a result. But you're absolutely right. The Republicans largely have had an information war and a narrative war that they have been deploying for the past 20 years on elections and every other aspect, really, of our country, the way that our country is governed. And they absolutely have done it in the context of election security. It's really remarkable when you think about it. 2000, there was the Brooks Brothers riot to stop a manual recount when Bush was ahead by just 537 votes. And that was led, Roger Stone says that he was in charge of it. He certainly was there. In 2016, again, Roger Stone coined Stop the Steal. They were doing this before the election in case Trump lost. Yep. They were hedging their bet by saying that the election would be stolen, even though all the reports were that Russia was hacking the election or attacking our infrastructure anyway.
In his favor, right.
Trump. 2018, again, Roger Stone, Ali Alexander, and some of these other, you know, now household names on the right, you know, went into a hissy fit over recounts that were being conducted in Florida, where the Republicans were ultimately had enjoyed poll defying wins. And those were not really truly meaningful recounts that were conducted. They were largely machine recounts when we need really manual recounts, according to the experts. And then, of course, in 2020, we had it really put on steroids with Stop the Steal, where after 4 years of violent rhetoric from Trump, his base was really primed to take it to the next level, which was violence at the Capitol.
Right, right. And, you know, the other part of it, though, is I'm in Florida. I still can't believe I'm here in Florida and seeing what's going on around me. But I am here regardless, where the election ran pretty flawlessly. But they want to do one of these recounts here anyway, and they changed the laws to do away with early voting and absentee. I voted absentee here in Florida, vote by mail, for at least the last 10 years without a hitch. It's never been a problem. I get the ballot. It shows up for each election. I fill it out. We usually drop it off at the supervisor of elections office just to be ultra safe, but they have drop boxes everywhere. They all ran fine. They undid all of that to get in line with this nonsense that, you know, our elections are being stolen and there's fraud left and right.
Well, I think there's more to it, actually, if I could just pause you right there,
please,
than that.
Yes.
I think that by calling all of our elections fraudulent, they have successfully gotten the Democrats to assume that things are fine without really having the evidence to know if they are or they aren't. So, for example, in Florida, they do not have meaningful manual audit or recount laws. They destroyed all of their ballot images in all of the large counties, which ballot images are public records. And those are images of your ballot as it goes through the scanners. In the House, two House races, there were two House races that were supposed to go to the Democrats that went to the GOP. There were no House races that were supposed to go to the GOP that went to the Democrats. The Republicans won all 27 out of 27 supposedly anticipated to be House toss-ups throughout the United States in House races. Also in Florida, there were problems with mail. So there was in that one of those House races that the GOP enjoyed an unexpected victory. There were reports of late delivery of mail ballots in Miami-Dade. And so one thing I think we have to all be really careful is to avoid a knee-jerk overcorrection for Trump's lies, because they're very good at doing that. And I absolutely think the Democratic Party has fallen a victim to that with its sort of that most secure election ever narrative, which was really, I think, misleading.
Right.
Because although it may have been the most secure election ever in certain respects, it was an extremely low bar. And that part is never said out loud, at least not by anybody with a large platform.
Right. And the other part, I mean, down here, this is South Florida, where politics are nuts. It's just, it is. I think it's the humidity, not necessarily the heat that does it. It fries whatever brain matter is there. But seriously, they, you know, Miami was the results were surprising because the Hispanic population largely went for Trump, which it should not have been the case. Well, what we find out is we've got a lot of, you know, there's hate talk media, right? There's tons of it in the propaganda that they spew. But here in mm-hmm. South Florida, on top of that, we have Spanish language radio that also, it's like the Democrats don't assign anybody to monitor it. And they're pushing all kinds of propaganda. They're doing the whole socialist scare thing, and we have a lot right. of, you know, it's this other world, and it's like the Democrats didn't pay attention to it, so they didn't counter it. But that's what happened in
right.
Miami.
There, that is part of it, but I do want to say something else. It's not the RNC that is doing a lot of this messaging for the Republican Party. It is, based on my research, it is largely coming from an umbrella organization and the organizations underneath it that are private organizations, they're nonprofits, supposedly. The Council for National Policy is sort of a right-wing strategy and networking group for the religious right and really religious extremists and billionaires. And then within it, it has pretty much every large right-wing organization that you can think of. Their leaders are members of the CNP, the Council for National Policy. So you talk about the Bradley Foundation or ALEC or Heritage mm-hmm. or the Federalist Society or Turning Point USA. They're all members of it. And they are the ones that are doing all this. And we don't have it. So it's, but it's really not the RNC. And therefore this is Jamie Harrison. Uh-huh. It's kind of us. There is no, you know, a lot of these organizations I think are profit motivated as part of it. And Democrats by nature, that is not as much to an extent. Yes, there's going to be corruption and greed, but it is not to this on the, nearly on the same level. And so you don't have that sort of same level of a propaganda machine that you really have on the right. But if we want that, it's not really, I mean, it would be nice if the DNC did it, but it's us. We have to do it. Unfortunately, it's the voters, but we just don't have that kind of funding.
Right.
And they're way ahead of us. They're 20 years ahead of us. The Leadership Institute, they're also involved in training the school board takeovers. They have, you know, they advertise on their websites.
Yep.
These are all CNP organizations, and they were heavily involved in the insurrection as well, at least in the events that led to the insurrection, if not the violence.
What's going on at the school boards now is really frightening. First of all, there are the threats and death threats against not only school board members, but their families. The stuff is batshit crazy. I mean, they're really threatening where a lot of school board members are just saying, this is not worth it. I'm not doing this anymore. And then they're putting up their, you know, their QAnon crazies to run for school board seats. They are doing a takeover, seemingly, but between the election offices that run the elections in states and counties down to the school board and everything else that they can get their paws on. Well, the thing is, as I pointed out before you came on, Jenny, they've been at this for decades. This clip, I've played it a yes. million times. You've heard it.
Paul Weyrich, yeah.
Paul Weyrich.
Is that my account that's playing the Paul Weyrich video? Because I played it many times too.
Oh, right.
Like I thought I left it on my screen or something.
No, so I play it all the time because that was 1980. This is over 40 years ago. And
well, he was a co-founder of the Council for National Policy. And again, like Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA is a CNP organization. He's in the CNP. They have been training people for at least, well, I don't know, several years, probably much longer than that. That's what they do. They've been targeting school boards. And the CNP wants to have, it really wants to destroy public education, at least as we know it, mm-hmm. and in favor of religious education. I mean, they've said it expressly that should be the number one goal of education is teaching about God. And they would really prefer, I think, private schools and charter schools and really undermining public education. They supported the dismantling of the Department of Education and actually wrote a letter calling on Trump and DeVos to do that,
which they
didn't do, fortunately, but that is still very much on their agenda. And so it's a very interesting thing with the school boards, because I have no doubt there are parents who are not part of some, you know, aren't formally trained to go to the school board meetings. But I think it's sort of this synergy that is actually starting at the top with really divisive messaging that they also used to trigger violence indirectly or directly at the January 6th insurrection. It's kind of the same types of, it's the same general network that's all within the CNP, and they do trainings and they, you know, they tell, they train, I think, how to get a reaction and how to have create content that if you put it in a video is going to fly with Facebook's algorithms or anybody else's algorithms and really bring attention. And that's how they're, I think it's really fake outrage. That is something that is trained into them at the Leadership Institute, by which was founded by Morton Blackwell, a longtime CMP guy, is that moral outrage is the number one motivator in politics. So they really try to fabricate that. That's what they always do. It's the same thing with all of those elections, the Brooks Brothers riot, yeah. Stop the Steal, and now the school board takeovers. And so they're using really, I believe, CRT and mask mandates is a pretext for taking over to get people all ginned up and riled up to take over public schools, which is what they wanted all along.
You know, the development of their campaign to basically take over elections, I think got a big push as the internet spread. Now the internet makes it so much easier for people that are isolated in remote parts of the country and even the world to be radicalized by these crazy ideas. And what we're learning now from these Facebook documents is the algorithms will take you down a rabbit hole. Some employees made a fake account, made it a mm-hmm. Trumper, who, I don't know, had those beliefs. And within 2 days, it was full on QAnon. That's how quickly it moved through the algorithms to take it to the worst place possible. This makes it easier for these people to gather and share the lies. And what's really sad is the internet could be a great tool that they could use to fact check it, to say, all right, is this true? But they don't do that. Instead, they listen to Fox or OAN, who are telling them that anything that the main, and I'm not a huge fan of the corporate media either, but everything that they tell you is a lie, that's really dangerous. And that's why this has been allowed to fester. When people ask me why on the left we don't have these groups, it's because we think for ourselves. We're not so easily led. If someone tells me something,
we're not religious extremists either. That is a huge, has been a huge motivator. Mm-hmm. I think that it is a really unappreciated motivator.
Interesting.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go please, ahead. You go. No, that's a great point. Saying,
well, Washington Post, I haven't read it yet, but someone sent it to me. The Washington Post just came out with an article, I believe today, on the Council for National Policy, which, you know, I first noticed it in 2017. I heard it about it from someone on Twitter who had previously gone to a religious school. Her name is Amanda Blount, and she'd been writing about it. I know that Ann Nelson has written a book about the Council for National Policy, but sort of the large publications like the Washington Post, that's what it takes. It takes about 4 years for them to finally catch on. And I remember when I first wrote my article in 2017, I kept changing the title because I just did it on Medium, but America's Taliban, I kept putting it on and taking it off because that's what it is. But it seemed like it was maybe a little over the top back then. And it really wasn't. It's actually quite spot on when you see the violence now at the insurrection, a lot of those supposedly God-fearing people, it's very similar to a Talibanical situation.
It
and it's really ironic. Something that I've noticed is that Steve Bannon, who was in the CNP, by the way, in 2014, and you know, he doesn't like Pope Francis because he's not conservative enough. He's too liberal. You know, Pope Francis is supposedly too liberal. He's a religious extremist, absolutely, Steve Bannon. And yet he claims that he opposes, in his book anyway, he said he doesn't oppose all Islam. It's only the religious extremists. He hates religious extremism. But these people that he has enabled and empowered, and he himself, they are religious extremists. They are Christofascists. And it's really... it is sort of the great irony in the whole thing that we are seeing just a different religion being radicalized.
Well,
in the United States.
It is. The Christian Taliban certainly exists.
Yes.
And it would kill me when I'd hear Republicans screaming about Sharia law. And then they go and spout their Christian Sharia bullshit. Don't push
exactly.
Your...
Exactly. There's a guy who's running in Ohio. Oh, what is his name?
It's Josh Mandel. Josh Mandel?
Yes, Josh Mandel. And he just posted, there is no separation of church and state.
Exactly.
He's the darling of all of these people under the CMP. And, you know, it's bad.
It's really bad.
And they're starting to just say it out loud. I think they feel that they have, the Overton window or whatever, they've become so extreme that now it's no one's going to bat an eye when they say, separation of church and state. Never mind. We don't want that.
They're saying Roe v. Wade. Yeah, we can.
Right.
Who needs that?
Long-time goal of the CMP and all the groups within it. It's really religious radicalism, and it is whether we can get on top of it, I don't know. I mean, we really need experts in propaganda and information warfare, and specifically though, in counteracting it. There's a woman named Bryony Swire Thompson, who I haven't seen interviewed anywhere, but she had a really, really good article out where she was explaining how it's not enough to just debunk the truth. You have to repeat the truth more often and with greater clarity than the lie. And so that's the problem when you have someone like Fox News out there that maybe, you know, that allowed people to spew lies and then they do a retraction one day.
Yeah, that nobody hears.
What happens is the studies they've shown is they revert back to their original. Even if they'll say, okay, I hear you, Fox News, that was a lie. But then if it isn't repeated, the retraction, they forget and they revert back to their original belief.
You know, and this goes back. George W. Bush, I don't know if you remember the soundbite when he talked about catapulting the propaganda. You got to catapult the propaganda. You say something enough times, people tend to believe you.
He admitted that? I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. I will find that for you. Oh, that was a biggie. Catapulting. Yeah. And, you know, it goes back for you. I remember years ago. You know what? I don't need to go there. But you say something enough times and people will believe you. I once said in a radio studio that the LA Dodgers, when they were winning the World Series, well, they listened to us in the locker room. And the guys that I worked with said they do. I said, I just said it on the radio. It's got to be true. That's it. That's what happens. But they have Fox regurgitating the lies over and over again.
And but you know what? I do want to give one just before I forget.
Okay.
Is that to an extent, again, I think that the Democrats have fallen for it too, not in the same way. They don't believe the lies, but they have fallen in it to the extent that they assume that the lies mean that everything is hunky-dory with election security, which right. clearly is not. Right before the 2020 election, I interviewed America's foremost election auditing expert, Philip Stark from UC Berkeley. And he told me that only a few states conduct audits that have a reasonably good chance of being able to detect outcome altering fraud. And even those states, really the most frightening part is that even those states only do one or two races. Yeah. And pretty much all election security experts say that the machines can be hacked every which way to Sunday, that including vote tallies, and that the only way to really know that have confidence that the results are accurate is to do these audits. If we're not going to just hand count the whole thing, is to do rigorous audits. And we're still not doing them. And so we just have to be really careful that we don't overcompensate.
Right. And you're making,
because that is falling for the propaganda too.
You're making such a great point. I mean, the thing I've always advocated for, I know Brad as well, hand ballots, hand counted paper ballots. I live in Florida. I wasn't here for the 2000 election. I was out in LA, but I came back shortly afterwards when they changed from those butterfly ballots that had the hanging chads and all that to the optical scan machines. And I remember, because I worked in news talk radio at the time, I went to the election supervisor's office in Broward County when they were introducing these machines, and they were so proud of them. And you fill out the bubbles. You had a paper ballot. You fill out the bubble things. You feed it through the scanner, and then it just says, thank you, your vote's been counted. And I said, where's my confirmation that it registered my ballot, my votes, the way I marked them on the ballot? There is none. So all you can take their word for it, that it scanned it the way you put it in with no proof. And then on top of that, there is no provision, or at least there wasn't at the time, in Florida for a hand recount, even though you had the paper ballots. So it defeats the purpose. So we didn't fix anything. And again, there were concerns in 2004, certainly about Ohio and other places. And there's a movie called Hacking Democracy that shows how easy it was to hack into those machines. None of these issues that were legitimate were ever investigated. We were told
that's,
we were
that's
crazy.
That's right. Is the only way. I mean, having paper is half the battle, but it's like saying you went to the store and you bought a lock, but you never installed it
right
on your door, you know, or a doorknob, but you never put it on your door. It is necessary, but not sufficient. And so unfortunately, without the meaningful audits, those paper or hand counts, those paper ballots mean nothing. And there's tremendous pushback to just hand counting everything, because really almost every election administrator says that our ballots are too long and too complicated to do it. And as someone I have never witnessed, well, some of our ballots do have, you know, shake your head, but some of them do have 30 plus.
Oh, I know. No, races. I'm shaking my head because it's true.
Oh,
pages and so pages.
And part of that, you know, really part of that is, I think, that in response to legislatures not listening to the voters have started doing referendums, and that makes our ballots longer. And then, of course, that makes it makes it harder. It's just this cascading problem that then it makes it harder to do the hand counting or even to do the auditing. So even if we ever get audits, most of those state races, which are so important, as we're seeing with the redistricting, the state legislatures decide a lot of the redistricting. Those races just aren't audited. They're kind of free for alls. If someone wanted to do something, nobody really looks, really almost ever. I mean, it's conceivable, I guess, that somebody could, but it really doesn't happen unless they get within that margin of like less than 0.5%. So, you know, if you're going to hack, you got to hack more than that.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it seems like, you know, we, and I'm using we as Democrats, and I don't want to make this partisan, but there is a definite divide. It's not both siderism because there's not equal offenders, I think, on both sides. But it seems when the Democrats raise legitimate issues, they're poo-pooed and ignored, and the Democrats don't follow through on it. Republicans make up issues and they take it to the extreme of like the stupid fraud it in Arizona, and then
the violence.
But they come really up with the Arizona. They said they didn't find anything, and Donald Trump the next day goes before a crowd and said the audit proved that the election was stolen. It proved no such thing. That's not even what they found, and he still lied about it. So what's our recourse?
I don't know. Honestly, that's why I think a lot of our recourse has to do with combating propaganda and somehow getting that to the people who are still salvageable, who have been sort of scammed. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've had different ideas, but I have almost too many ideas. So I thought about, you know, postcards for truth, because during World War II, I had read that we literally dropped postcards. And at this point, that might be the only way to reach some people. But of course, they're not going to just believe what's on the postcard. So then there's that. I think showing people what I've really been looking for just recently is examples of how they do it, how they twist the truth so much. So, for example, in the UK, Tommy Robinson is this far right activist who Bannon has praised, and sort of his proteges have been meeting with the guy recently. He's very anti-Muslim, and he would put out these videos where there was one that really went, and when I say viral, I don't mean like a million views. I mean like, well, I don't want to, maybe it was 50 million. I don't know. Wow. It went crazy.
Okay.
And it was completely, the producer who helped with the premise of the video was supposedly that Tommy Robinson's producer had been attacked by an immigrant in Italy. And then Tommy Robinson, you know, showing the aftermath where he's telling the guy off and punched him and stuff. And that was and then the guy's kind of angry. The producer was so horrified by the deceptive editing that he released the entire thing to the independent UK. And when you look at the entire video, it's completely different. Number one, the producer said he was never attacked. So the immigrant didn't instigate it. Tommy Robinson instigated it. He punched him. And not only did he punch him, he like walloped him to the ground. He gave him a serious beating. And then they jiggered it all up to make it look like the immigrant was the aggressor. And I think showing those kinds of things, because nobody likes to be duped, there are enough examples. Most of the time, you're not going to be able to prove that, but there are enough examples where I'm hoping that if we can sort of start showing the mechanics of how they have done this division, how they have manufactured outrage, that at least some people will be outraged, because nobody likes to be duped. I don't know. That's just one idea I have. And that's what I've been working on recently. But, you know, I'm also very invested in making sure at sort of the micromanaging level that we have some level of security, because it doesn't appear that it's going to happen at a federal level. And there are always things that we can do to improve the situation, even if we aren't going to get those audits. And there is some cause for hope. Election transparency advocates did persuade the Department of Education to clarify that those ballot images, which Florida, all the large counties in Florida, was destroying and can be used for citizen audits, the DOJ confirmed that those are public records and cannot be destroyed. So Florida was destroying them and had to get sued and still destroyed them. And the litigation is actually ongoing. Whether they'll listen to the DOJ, I don't know. But that's helpful. That's something. Wow. And there's lots of stuff like that that can still be done. We need backup paper poll books for electronic check-in computers to make sure they don't accidentally or intentionally fail in, you know, Democratic areas. And that's it sounds really mundane, but when you see those lines snaking along for miles and miles and you find it's because the check-in computer is all broken, they didn't have backup paper poll books, it's a big deal.
There are so many things we should be doing. And the bottom line is we're not doing any of them. And the Democrats...
No, we are doing some of them. No.
Okay.
Honestly, election
not
transparency
enough.
Advocates are... That was Audit USA on the ballot images. I had written in about it as well about the DOJ, you know, stepping in on Florida's destruction of them. And then Marilyn Marks, her coalition, got a successful ruling in court on Georgia's destruction of the... Or refusal to provide backup paper poll books. They had to provide them. But now it's on appeal right now.
Okay.
But people could fund her organization, the Coalition for Good Governance, because they're one of the only organizations that sort of identifies those sleeper issues that end up being so important on Election Day.
My point in saying I was obviously misspeaking, and I'm not saying we're doing nothing, but we're not doing enough. We are being overrun by the right, who are organized, and they play the long game. And as you know from Paul Weyrich, they've been playing it for over 40 years. And the Democrats just seem to go along. It's like, okay, we won, we're good. And we need to get more serious because everything's at stake here. And I worry that President Biden isn't speaking out forcefully enough about the threat to our right to vote. Do you think he's doing enough as a leader to stop this?
Absolutely not. No, I am really even before, separate and apart from the voting rights legislation, I was under the impression when he became president that he would declassify all of the information around the 2016 election, which I think is really important to sort of blunt the force of this stop the steal lie. Because there was a lot of stuff that happened in 2016 to the benefit of Trump that kind of, you know, and I really thought he would pardon, for example, Reality Winner, who was the young Air Force veteran who released information that Russia had penetrated our election system further than our own government had let on. The problem is Biden was part of that government that wasn't revealing that information. And so I don't know if that's why he hasn't pardoned her, but there, unfortunately, as far as election security is concerned, there are really two different schools of thought. And there are the security proponents who think it's best to keep everything on the down low on a need to know basis, and that there should just be sort of like a small group of people in the government who get to know whether our elections are free and fair. And then there are those of us like me who are election transparency advocates, and Brad and you, who think that, no, that's really dangerous because you can never, for one thing, control the possibility of corrupt insiders or negligent insiders. And so we really need transparency to protect against both fraud and to protect against false claims of fraud so that we can defend against, you know, false claims. So we need meaningful audits so that we can defend against false claims of fraud. And, you know, one of the things with Arizona that was really awkward was Arizona's audits are not that great. Their official audits really aren't. So there was a lot of propaganda saying that they were, you know, we already did all these audits in Maricopa County. Well, okay, but even the center, what's it called? CAP, Center for American Progress, had done a report on Arizona in 2018 that said Arizona's audits in general are not very good, although Maricopa's are better than the rest of the state.
Okay, but then they have the cyber ninjas coming in, like they're going to do it better? Right, of course. But that's the disconnect here. And they were at
a huge disconnect, but check this out. So every news organization was all over the cyber ninjas' partisan connections, and they were all over it. It was fair game on every news show to show that they weren't credible. Well, guess what? The vendors have partisan connections, and that was an issue that, you know, I think is worth discussing. It doesn't prove fraud. It is inappropriate. And it undermines confidence in elections. And yet that has been considered not newsworthy when they are responsible for a much larger swath of our votes than the cyber ninjas will ever look at.
Right.
Which is, honestly, the cyber ninjas deserve to be taken down. They were hypocrites. They weren't transparent themselves.
No, and the whole thing was just a farce. right? A farce, a ridiculous farce that went on and went on and went on at great expense to the taxpayers. It wasn't worth 2 cents. And it found that that there was no fraud there. Yet Trump goes on stage and said, oh, it vindicated me. The whole thing is enough to make your head explode. It makes mine.
Well, they do the fire hose of falsehoods, which drowns out people's attention spans and really ability to fight back. You can't keep up with it. I mean, no one person certainly can keep up with it. And then it just leaves his followers with a general impression of somehow their guy was cheated.
Right.
You know, even... Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. Rand Corporation did a whole paper on it, and that's what it's called. And Steve Bannon is a big proponent of it. He calls it flooding the zone with shit. I mean, he admitted it.
And that's what he wants to do. He wants to do more of. I hope the Democrats can get their shit together and get this guy off the streets. I know he was in prison and Trump pardoned him, but I think we are in a really, really scary time in history that we won't even know
really
how bad
are.
It is.
And a lot of, unfortunately, they used the First Amendment against us to an extent. It is very hard to know where that dividing line is between, imminent threat of violence and not imminent.
Right.
And it was really, I think over the course of, like I said at the beginning, over the course of 4 years, Trump groomed his followers for violence by celebrating when, you know, a journalist was assaulted
of
by
course.
That guy, Greg
Gianforte, who is
Montana,
now the governor, right?
And celebrating when the reporter Ollie Velshi was pummeled with a rubber bullet and saying, you know, I'll pay your legal fees
if you beat somebody up. In the rally.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And lock her up was, you know, with everybody up there like a Nazi rally chanting lock her up. He primed them for violence over 4 years, but you can't take any one thing and show that this was the one thing that led to the violence at January 6th. It was a pattern over a period of time. And they really exploit these things that are difficult. They are difficult to prove in court, although I actually think you could when you put all of his violent rhetoric together and what his surrogates were saying.
Oh, I hope someone does
which
that.
He didn't disavow.
No,
you know, like
never.
Lindell calling for executions. And I think it was very predictable.
Yeah, very much so. Jennifer Cohn, we could keep going.
We could.
Yes, we're already late. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. You're great. I know Brad, you're on Brad's show a lot, and I appreciate you coming on here. And if it's okay, I will call on you again because this is an issue that's not going away, unfortunately.
Oh, I would love for you to. And I'd just like to put a quick plug out for my Twitter handle, which is at Jenny Cohn1, JennyCohn1. And thank you so much for having me on. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, it was a pleasure for me as well. Thank you so much. And I'll put that all on the blog where I post the show, NicoleSandler.com, with the date /10-25-21. Jenny Cohn, thank you so much. And we'll talk again.
Great.
Appreciate
thank you.
It. Bye-bye. All right. With that, we are done. That's a Monday show for you. Tomorrow should be a party because we have Kathleen Ballou coming on who wrote A Field Guide to White Supremacy. So, hey, we're on a roll here. All right. With that, I'll see you tomorrow. We've got a big week, though, so do stay tuned. I booked that person because it sounds interesting. I haven't gotten the book yet, so I'll have to look it up online or something. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for bearing with my rambling. I will see you tomorrow. I will leave you with the news because there's a lot of it. All right. Have a good one, everyone. See you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Rolling Stone magazine breaking a huge story Sunday night, drawing direct lines from members of Congress to the January 6th attack on the Capitol, confirming that three of the people directly involved in the planning have spoken with the House Select Committee, and two of them have spoken with Rolling Stone extensively. It all culminates in allegations that a number of members of Congress were intimately involved in planning both Trump's efforts to overturn the election loss and the January 6th events that turned violent at the Capitol. The two sources also claim they interacted with members of Trump's team, including former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who they describe as having had an opportunity to prevent the violence. The two sources
both of whom have been granted anonymity due to the ongoing investigation, describe participating in dozens of planning briefings ahead of that day. These two participants turned witnesses both say that members who participated in these conversations or had top staffers join in included Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gosar, Lauren Boebert, Mo Brooks, Madison Cawthorn, Andy Biggs, and Louis Gohmert. And both also described Trump's White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, as one who played a major role in the conversations surrounding the protests on January 6th. Among other things, they both say concerns were raised to Meadows about Ali Alexander's protest at the Capitol and the potential that it could spark violence. Meadows was subpoenaed by the committee last month as part of a group of people with close ties to the former guy who were working in or had communications with the White House on or in the days leading up to the January 6th insurrection. One of these witnesses said, quote, Meadows was 100% made aware of what was going on. He's also like a regular figure in these really tiny groups of national organizers. Now, we're starting a new week. This week will be critical for President Biden's domestic agenda on both the so-called bipartisan infrastructure package, or the BIF, and the larger Build Back Better human infrastructure spending bill. The House could vote on the BIF package as early as Wednesday or Thursday. The spending bill is still being negotiated behind closed doors, but the Democrats hope to agree on a framework for a trimmed-down package of social, healthcare, and education programs, but they reportedly remain insistent on items like free pre-K education and a Medicare extension. And President Biden wants some sort of climate initiative set in these bills before he leaves on his trip on Thursday to the G20 summit in Rome and the United Nations Climate Summit in Scotland. To that end, Biden met this weekend with Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer at his home in Delaware. Reports say they made progress and that Manchin is now, quote, agreeable to the White House's new approach on the tax proposals, which means new taxes on billionaires' wealth instead of an increase in tax rates, which, as Elizabeth Warren explained, wouldn't affect them.
What I'm talking about here is a tax on billionaires. It's not about raising the rates. Look at somebody like Jeff Bezos. What does he have in the income? $83,000 a year. It's less than a Boston public school teacher. Raising the rate is not going to cause Jeff Bezos to pay a penny more. What we need is we need a tax that focuses on the wealth of the richest Americans. And that's what Senator Sinema and I have been talking about.
So senior Democrats are preparing a big new tax plan that would aim to raise hundreds of billions of dollars from the fortunes of America's roughly 700 billionaires. Under this billionaire tax proposal, the feds would require billionaires to pay taxes on the increased value of their assets, like stocks, on an annual basis, regardless of whether they sell those assets. Billionaires would also be able to take deductions for the annual loss in value of those assets. But it would also set up a system for taxing assets that are not easily tradable, like real estate. The tax would apply to billionaires and to people earning over $100 million in income 3 years in a row. And the negotiations continue. Meanwhile, most of us have the images seared into our memories of the torch-bearing white supremacists marching in Charlottesville, Virginia at the so-called Unite the Right rally back in August of 2017. Well, a lawsuit against the organizers finally begins on Monday. The event started with a torchlit march during which those people chanted racist and anti-Semitic slogans. The next day, a rally supporter drove into a crowd of counter-protesters, killing one woman and injuring dozens of others. The plaintiffs accused the two dozen organizers of intentionally fomenting the violence that left them injured. There are 24 defendants, including some of the country's most notorious racists, Jason Kessler, the rally's main organizer, and Richard Spencer, one of the featured speakers. The jury will decide whether organizing the rally amounted to a conspiracy to engage in racially motivated violence. The trial is expected to last until about November 19th. Well, more insanity from Florida, where the governor keeps earning the nickname of moron death sentence more each day. Here's the latest. He's now offering $5,000 bonuses to police officers who've been fired in other states because they refuse to take the vaccine. Seriously. Meanwhile, out on the West Coast, a powerful storm barreling towards Southern California after flooding highways, toppling trees, and causing mud flows in areas burned bare by recent fires across the northern part of the state. A, quote, atmospheric river was on the way, a long and wide plume of moisture pulled in from the Pacific Ocean. Flash flood watches are up for most of Central and Northern California. Some areas could get a foot and a half of rain, and there are power outages, and some reporting flooding and mudslides. Stay safe, everyone. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
The variant.
Yes. So the volume of parcels over that same period that the Postal Service delivers went from 1.4 billion